In this hour of Focus 580, we will be talking about recent developments in Haiti. On January 1st, the country marked its Independence Day. It's bicentennial, in fact, 200 years since independence. But there would be a lot of people in Haiti who would have said there wasn't very much to celebrate. In fact, Haiti is one of the poorest countries in the Western Hemisphere, perhaps the poorest. There are very high levels of unemployment. Two-thirds of the country's workers are unemployed. Most people in Haiti live on about a dollar a day. Life expectancy there is now the lowest in the hemisphere, I believe, 49 years. It's the nation that leads the region, the number of AIDS cases, just the bad statistics go on and on and on. Also, it's a country that has been marked by political conflict in the last couple of years, really going back to the elections, the presidential election of 2000, conflict between opponents of the president, Mr. Aristide, and supporters of the president. This morning in this part of the show, we'll be trying to talk about what has been going on there recently with Dr. Robert McGuire. He is Director of Programs in International Affairs at Trinity College. That's in Washington, D.C. He has done a lot of work in the Caribbean. He worked with the Inter-American Foundation and the Department of State. He also was in the Peace Corps in the Caribbean, but he's probably best known for his work on Haiti. He's been involved in that country since the mid-70s through the affiliations with the Inter-American Foundation, the Department of State, Johns Hopkins, Brown, and Georgetown universities. He's written a lot on the subject and is joining us this morning by telephone to talk about it. Questions are welcome, 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. Professor McGuire, hello.
Hello, David. Glad to be with you this morning.
Well, thanks very much for talking with us once again, and we certainly appreciate it. There has been quite a lot of coverage here just recently about Haiti, and I think that the opponents of the president were relying on that fact, because Haiti doesn't get a whole lot of coverage, but I'm sure that they knew that there would be stories written to mark the bicentennial. And so there have been stories, and all of them have some sort of theme to them, like my introduction that says people in Haiti marking the bicentennial, but not much to celebrate because things are so bad and there has been a lot of conflict there. Is there any particular reason why this political conflict has gotten worse in the last couple of weeks, or was this in fact a strategic kind of decision on the part of Mr. Aristide's opponents because they knew that there at least would be some coverage of Haiti around the first of the year because of the bicentennial?
Right. Well, I think it's a little bit of each, actually. The rivalry between Mr. Aristide and his opponents, of course, is a long festering one. And you mentioned in your intro elections in 2000 that were kind of one of the manifestations of that rivalry, when the government soundly defeated its opponents, but then part of those elections were identified as problematic with miscounting of votes. And since that time, both Mr. Aristide and his opponents have been kind of going down a course of polarization within the country. So this has been something that has been present in Haiti, although there was an event on December 5th that kind of changed a little bit the momentum against Mr. Aristide, I think. I could just outline that very briefly, because prior to December 5th, his opponents had not been terribly successful in mobilizing large numbers of people in the streets of Haiti for demonstrations. But on December 5th, there was an incident where university students were protesting against the government, and it turned into a violent episode of some of Aristide's supporters injuring some of the students and the rector of the university. And the police were, depending on your point of view, either not very proactive or perhaps even abetting the protesters on the Aristide side. And this kind of galvanized a society that puts education at such a high premium to become disenchanted with this street violence that is often attributed to Aristide. So following December 5th, you had an increase in momentum of Aristide's opponents putting people in the street. So that's the incident that really kind of looks like the watershed at the moment. But then on the other side of the equation, yes, the opponents knew that there would be a lot of attention given to Haiti at its bicentennial, And I think strategically they tried to take some of that attention for themselves and take it away from what should have been the celebration of a magnificent event.
Mm. President Aristide was first elected president in 1990, and it wasn't long after his election that he was overthrown by a coup, and he ended up spending most of his term in office in exile in the United States until he returned with military help from the United States in 1994. So then he had to sit out a term because the Haitian constitution says you can't have two consecutive terms. So then that is how it is that he came to be reelected then in 2000.
That's right.
And when he was elected in 1990, I think that there were a lot of people who felt some optimism in him and in the kind of things that he said, and that they thought this might be the beginning of a real new era for Haiti. And it doesn't seem to have happened. Is one forced to conclude that President Aristide has essentially been, not taking any pleasure in saying this, but has essentially been a failure?
Well, he's been a very, very severe disappointment. One could argue that he is about to fail in trying to put forth his, what I would characterize as a program of reform and populist reform in Haiti. One could argue on all sides of this equation. On the one hand, Aristide has not really had the opportunity to govern in an unfettered way ever since 1990. There's always been some sort of circumstance, either the military or lack of resources or something, that have kept him from actually governing. And, of course, the government of Haiti is enormously dependent upon external resources to have programs, given the poverty, the lack of income generation through taxation, and so on. So Aristide was inaugurated to a second term in early 2001, promising a great deal of programs that would have been dependent upon receipt of international assistance, but the assistance did not come, and as a result, Aristide has done little to satisfy the expectations of Haiti's poor people. And those resources did not come in large part because of his own miscalculations and abuse of power, going back to those elections again. So Aristide is certainly a disappointment. He will fail in his ability to move Haiti forward unless somehow this current political crisis can be somehow diffused and resources from international organizations can flow into Haiti, particularly to give the government some opportunity to enact programs on the ground.
We have a caller to bring into the conversation. Let's do that in Champaign, I believe, here on line number one. Hello.
Hi. I didn't read any long articles about the celebration of the Haitian Revolution, you know, the 200-year anniversary, but I was even surprised by the BBC's coverage, let alone NPR's, when they referred to, you know, the poverty of Haiti. They seemed to just act as if it just happened in the 1990s. Perhaps things have gotten even worse, although I remember it being the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, well, as long as I can remember, having heard about Haiti, and I really didn't think it could get any worse, but perhaps it has. And I just wondering if you go over, you know, what has happened in the last 200 years, and, you know, maybe talk about whether American imperialism has anything to do with the economic conditions in Haiti, and why people in South America in general might have been reluctant to support the war in Iraq.
Okay. I would be glad to address the questions on Haiti. I'm not going to touch the Iraq question because I think we want to focus on Haiti here. But you raise an important point. Today's Haiti has to be put in the perspective of history. And, of course, what Haiti is celebrating this year is the 200th anniversary of the second independent country in the hemisphere, and what making it truly special was that Haiti's independence was born out of a war where slaves defeated their colonial masters and established a country of free black people from Africa in an environment where every piece of territory surrounding it was based upon slavery. in Haiti's first constitution proclaimed that any person of African origin who managed to get to Haiti would become a free Haitian citizen. Well, of course, this didn't put Haiti in very good stead with the slave-owning powers in the area, be they the European colonial powers or even the U.S. And Haiti became pretty much of a pariah state, being forced to pay indemnity to the French to gain recognition from the French, which had to happen before any other country would recognize Haiti's independence. And the U.S. Didn't recognize Haiti's independence until 1862, some 58 years following its independence, and the U.S. could only recognize Haiti then because, of course, it was found a way to resolve its own issue of slavery. So Haiti, in some respects, went behind the eight ball right from the start, in large part because of the international response to its revolution. However, Haiti has also been a victim of its own internal problems, and we might characterize them by saying that when Haiti threw off the yoke of colonialism, in some respects, it adapted a neo-colonial society where elite people managed the economy and poor people were more or less excluded from true participation in the national life. This is a system which has developed and enrooted itself and maintained itself in Haiti in the past 200 years, with social and political and economic elites accustomed to having their way in Haiti, while impoverished people are pretty much what Haitians call the moun en dehors in Creole, which means pretty much the people on the outside, the people who are excluded. So this combination of international pressure on Haiti and then Haiti's own internal divisions and apartheid almost like society really did not help it move forward. And then you did mention U.S. imperialism. Well, we could point to the fact that, of course, the U.S. did intervene in Haiti in 1915 and occupied the country for 19 years, in large part because there was a threat that German interests would lead to a German intervention in Haiti, and the U.S. was proactively making sure that didn't happen. At the same time, the U.S. intervention in Haiti and occupation did lead to significant infrastructural developments in Haiti, but it tended to reinforce this kind of division within the society with elites ruling the country. Now, of course, taking this to Aristide represents something very different, and throughout his political career, something very frightening to the elites of Haiti. Aristide represents those outsider people who want to be included in the national society of national life, and this has, of course, led to and festered a lot of the division that Aristide confronts today.
I appreciate the comment of the caller. Let me take a piece of that and talk about involvement of the United States in Haiti recently, because certainly right. The United States has been involved in and has involved itself in Haiti for some time now. So at least we certainly have been involved quite a bit, at least over the last dozen years. First of all, in that we supported President Aristide when he was ousted by the coup. We took him in and continued to try to put pressure on the military, and finally the Haitian military did indeed relinquish power under military threat from the United States, and then we, with the assistance of military, took Mr. Aristide home, essentially escorted him home, and continued to support him. What since that time, though, that we were in a very high profile way involved in Haiti, what has the United States done?
Well, I think we can look at this in two basic ways. First, let's look a little bit about the intervention, which occurred under the Clinton administration and sanctioned by the UN. The problem with that intervention, which was successful in restoring an elected government to the country and ousting the military leaders, is that at that time in 1994-95, we were still living under the shadow of what had happened in Somalia to U.S. troops there. And there was a strong move in Washington not to allow the U.S. intervention in Haiti to lead what was being called to at that time a situation of mission creep, which would have been somewhat akin to more involvement in nation building. So we restored Aristides and kind of oversaw some elections and then pretty much withdrew. So the job was not really completed, and it could have been completed, but there was a great deal of reluctance in the U.S., particularly in the Congress, which had become controlled by the Republicans on the House side in 94, if you recall, against really finishing the job in Haiti. So the Clinton administration was somewhat handcuffed in sending resources to Haiti that would have helped us finish the job. Now, if we jump ahead a little bit, the Bush administration's approach to Haiti has been quite different from the Clinton administration's approach. The Clinton approach was very much of a hands-on involvement at some of the highest levels of government, tremendous awareness of what was going on in Haiti, viewing Haiti as a combination of an international and a domestic issue because of migration prospects from Haiti, as well as the fact that there are strong domestic constituencies in the U.S. that tend to be Democratic, that are Democrat Party oriented, that focus on Haiti. The Bush administration has had a policy of more hands-off on Haiti. It's quite clear that the leaders of this administration do not view Mr. Aristide in a very kind way, but they have acknowledged that he is the president of Haiti, legitimate president of Haiti. But nevertheless, the Bush administration has been pretty hands-off, has not really supported the government of Haiti, and I would argue through a combination of mixed messages from Washington have been instrumental somewhat in encouraging the opposition in Haiti to continue its kind of forceful opposition to Aristide, with the hopes that in almost like a Venezuela-type scenario, that the U.S. would support the opposition and therefore facilitate Aristide's fall from power. Hmm.
Let's take another call. This is Champaign County, and it's line two. Hello.
Hi. Where to start? You mentioned, the host mentioned that we supported Aristide during the coup, which is, the coup was under Papa Bush, and it was, we installed FRAP. Toto Constant is secured in Miami. The Cedras, who was the couster, pretty much Washington's man, is now in an enclave in Panama, where he's living. Okay, where he should be extradited. They both should be extradited to Haiti. It seems to me. So we hardly supported. I mean, it was pretty clear that the coup was orchestrated from here, and it seems that the same thing is going to happen again. It doesn't take much money to turn out a crowd. I'm not dismissing the abuses and the allegations, but I'm just I've been trying to read some in French, and that's where I discovered the indemnity to France. I don't know how long that was paid. It was 90 million francs, and I understood it was paid into this century, into the 40s or something like that. 90 million francs over for recognizing the independence of their most France's most lucrative colony at the time. It's just an outrageous thing to saddle on an independent country, and I think it led to a lot of the abuses. But I did find a story that way down in the bottom, this is in Liberation, a son of a journalist who was killed by the apparently some Aristide supporters in a pretty notorious fashion. I don't have his name in front of me right now. You probably do know who he is. But he pointed at the external pressure, the IMF, the kind of holding hostage Haiti, you know, basically to, I don't know, I would like for you to react to some of that, if you would.
Okay, fine. Let's just go back to the historical part first, the issue of the indemnity. My understanding is that indemnity was not paid into the 20th century, but it was an issue that was resolved in the 19th century, by the mid-19th century. However, the whole issue of that indemnity has kind of come back around. In recent months, the government of Aristide has been leading the charge to try to get the French to restore some of that funding to Haiti, arguing of how, indeed, it did debilitate the country. I don't remember the exact figure, but it is a major figure that the government of Haiti is asking the French to contribute to Haiti.
I thought the figure that I saw was $21 million.
I think it's actually $21
billion. Oh, $21 billion. Well,
yeah,
$21 million wouldn't be really very much money, would it?
And the French have reacted in a very kind of circumspect way. The most recently, they have sent a commission headed by Regis Debray, who, of course, was one time a confidant of Che Guevara, but whom I understand has kind of had a change in his political orientation, is now working with a more conservative French government. But there is some discussion about this, and maybe there's some way that the French can find a happy solution. I just don't know. But the issue has been raised, and it has been eclipsed somewhat over all of the other issues that are kind of hogging the headlines here on what's going on politically in Haiti. In terms of the U.S. supporting Aristide, I think you're correct in the sense that the coup did occur when the first President Bush was in office. He did condemn the coup, but did not really forcefully fall behind President Aristide to restore him. In fact, there were history of things that showed that perhaps the Bush administration was going to waver off of Aristide. But then when Mr. Clinton was elected, I think eventually the emphasis got more back onto the idea of supporting Aristide's return to Haiti, almost to the effect that, you know, he may be an SOB, but he's our SOB, and he got elected, and if we're going to support democracy in the hemisphere, we have to really support it. The OAS was behind Aristide and so on and so forth. And even just this morning, I heard Secretary Powell on an NPR report saying that, you know, 33 of the 34 countries in the hemisphere are democracies, excluding Cuba. So Haiti is still viewed as a democracy by the U.S., even with all of these particular problems. But you're right, there is a tradition of impunity in Haiti, and those who led the coup and who really did damage the country and brutalize the people did get off scot-free, and they have never been there's never been any kind of a judicial process in Haiti over what they've done, but there's a tradition of that in the country, and one would argue that somewhere along the line impunity has to end, but it hasn't yet. And this, in fact, may be one of the problems with the situation today, where the more radical supporters of Mr. Aristide believe that they essentially, because their man is in power, that they can put themselves above the law as well.
Well, the caller seemed to be suggesting that he went beyond the assertion that the support of the United States for Aristide was pale. He said that the United States was involved in the coup. Do you believe that was that is the case?
You know, David, I'm not willing to put myself that starkly behind that position. You know, Washington does play a very important role in Haiti. And again, Washington was sending out mixed signals all along, and people in Haiti pick and choose the signal they want to hear, and they act upon it. Our interests in Haiti are such that I'm just not totally convinced that the U.S. Masterminded the coup. But obviously, there were forces in Washington that supported that coup once it occurred and sent the signals to Haiti that they did. So these mixed signals to Haiti kind of helped very much to extend the pain that Haiti was under during that period of time.
We're a little bit past the midpoint here. Certainly would welcome other callers. Our guest is Dr. Robert McGuire. He's Director of Programs in International Affairs at Trinity College in Washington, D.C., and has been following politics in the Caribbean for some time. He's particularly known for his work on Haiti, and that's what we're talking about here this morning. Your questions welcome here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I wonder if we could talk just a bit more about the election of 2000, as we have discussed when President Aristide was re-elected president for a second non-consecutive term, because that's the Constitution says that's the way that you have to do it in Haiti, and that there were allegations, and his opponents say that there was election fraud, and there has been a kind of a conflict in the country ever since, because some in the opposition say that before anything else can happen, President Aristide needs to step aside. And he said that he won't do that. What is known about the elections of 2000, and was there indeed fraud, and how widespread was that?
Well, actually, there were two elections in 2000. In May of 2000, there were national elections for parliamentary posts, municipal government posts, and local government posts. And it is surrounding the election of 8 or 10 senators out of 19 positions, which is where the electoral problem emerged. The Haitian government was using a vote counting system that seemed to favor the ruling party. The OAS and the U.S. and the Canadians and Europeans called them on it and said, look, you're counting the votes in the wrong way. You need to rerun 8 or 10 senatorial election seats, and then these elections will be fine. But the Aristide government, well, it wasn't the Aristide government. It was the Preval government at the time, the successor of President Aristide, which refused to rerun these elections. And this has led to a situation of loggerheads with the government of Haiti and the international community, particularly over the issue of aid. The second set of elections in 2000 was in November, and that election was essentially the presidential election, which also had some senatorial posts as a part of it. That election is not really contested as fraudulent. Essentially what happened was by November of 2000, the opposition political groups had determined to boycott the election, so Aristide ran virtually unopposed. The voter turnout was quite light. There wasn't much of a campaign because it was already viewed, you know, what would happen. And Aristide won by a landslide in November 2000. But those elections are not contested in the sense that there was any lingering controversy over vote counting and that sort of thing.
Who makes up the opposition, and how unified in terms of political viewpoints and what they would do if they had the political power, are they?
Yeah, this is a critical question, David. I'm glad you asked it. Traditionally, because this has become kind of a point of real interest as the situation evolves in Haiti, the traditional opposition to Aristide, if I may say, has come from what Haitians themselves call the political class. And these are essentially middle and upper middle class people who are born into political activism, generally create some kind of political party that is centered around themselves, and then you know, self-nominate themselves to run for office. This kind of traditional politics of Haiti does not bode well for any kind of institution building. And these members of the traditional political class have, by and large, not really captured the imagination of Haitian voters. Because they view them as the kind of successors of politicians of the past years that have not served the people of Haiti very well. Emerging about a little more than a year ago, however, was a slightly different kind of opposition. It called itself a civil society group called the Group of 184. And again, somewhat similar to the situation in Venezuela, the opposition to Chavez. This group in Haiti is led by and large by social and economic elites from the business sector who traditionally do not get directly involved in politics but like to play a role behind the scene of, you know, exerting their power to make sure that the people in office are beneficial to their interests. They began this campaign a little more than a year ago as kind of under the auspices of not necessarily anti-Aristide, but of of viewing the need for new social contract in Haiti. But little by little, their leadership has become more radicalized, in part due to the conflict that they have experienced from some of Aristide's strong supporters. And this group of 184 civil society slash kind of elite, socio-economic elite leadership has, within the past 3 or 4 months, become very, very openly anti-Aristide, leading the call for his removal. So they have kind of joined forces with the political opposition, the traditional political opposition, into a more broad and united front. In fact, one could say this group of 184 has somewhat eclipsed the traditional political opposition. So they're the ones who are kind of really with the rhetoric to get Aristide out now and leading the demonstrations in the street. One of the scary scenarios of what's going on right now, however, is that there are components of that opposition that are allied to the former military and paramilitary groups. I don't know if your listeners are aware of this, but there have been some violent episodes within the past couple of years along the Dominican border on the Haiti side of armed groups of men coming in from the Dominican Republic and killing people. And there was an attack on the palace in late 2001 that was apparently orchestrated on the Dominican side by disaffected Haitian military. So there's a kind of a scary scenario out there that one can look at that I call it the unholy alliance, where all those who oppose the government for one reason or another will find common cause and try to do whatever they can to oust the government. I don't know how far this might go, but it is something that analysts are watching. One of Aristide's strong supporters in his own party, who is a former military officer himself, a fellow named Danny Toussaint, he's a senator, he has, within the past month, broken with Aristide. And Toussaint has proclaimed that, you know, he is the one who can control the streets in Haiti and not Aristide. So there is this kind of undercurrent here of fear that this thing could evolve into a more violent scenario. And in the meantime, Haiti has no army anymore, because one of the things that Aristide did was to disband the Haitian army. So Haiti is one of those rare countries in the world that has no army. And what it has is a national police force of about 3,500 men who are demoralized, badly led, and facing a great deal of pressure in the streets from protesters on both sides of the equation. And it's a scenario that bears a careful watching, because if there cannot be some sort of nonviolent reconciliation with Aristide and his political opponents, this thing could potentially spin out of control.
We'll go again to a caller in Champaign, line number one. Hello.
But that's okay.
Yeah,
but,
no, go ahead. Yes.
Chance to call back again. Can you talk more about the Dominican Republic then? You just mentioned, especially the history or, Trujillo and Haiti.
Sure.
Do those politics that go back so many years have
I think we'll just point out a couple of important episodes in history that influenced the relationship. First off, Haiti occupied the Dominican Republic from 1822 to 1844. It was the period of liberation of the Spanish colonies in South and Middle America. And the liberators of South America did not pay attention to the Dominican Republic and the Haitian army, which had assisted Bolivar in his liberation, went into the Dominican Republic in 1822 and expelled the Spanish and occupied the country for 22 years. This has left in many regards an indelible mark on the Dominican psyche that is a kind of an anti-Haitian, anti-noir, or anti-black kind of psyche. And then when the U.S. Marines occupied Haiti, in the dates I had mentioned earlier, they were also occupying the Dominican Republic. not for as long a time, but for I think 9 years or 10 years. And during that time, a great deal of investment went into the Dominican Republic to develop its sugar industry, which was basically U.S. owned. And it was during this time that Haitian laborers began to be recruited to come and cut cane in the Dominican Republic. We're talking around in the 19-teens. So Haitian laborers began coming in the DR, and then if we jump forward to the 1930s with Trujillo coming in power, the dictator Rafael Trujillo, he led a kind of a nationalist pogrom of Haitians, massacring many. No one knows exactly how many. I've seen estimates into the 20,000s, and other Haitians fleeing back into Haiti at that time in the 30s. The relationships between the DR and Haiti were tense ever since. However, since 1995, they have cooled down quite a bit with new leadership in the Dominican Republic that's more modern and contemporary, and the Caudillo of Balaguer is gone. The anti-Haitian sentiment is a little bit kind of easing up in the Dominican Republic, and there are 500,000 Haitians who live in the Dominican Republic working in construction, agriculture, tourism, and so on. Aristide and his previous president, Preval, have, open communication with the Dominicans. So there's an improvement in relations. But then you have this sorry situation of some of the former military of Haiti who are apparently active in the Dominican Republic. I don't think it's a quite large number, but it's a disturbing number, and it does disturb the government of Haiti. That and the migration issue continue to be strong sticking points in the relationships between the two countries.
When you say the former military, these are the military under Duvalier, or what's their relationship with the Tonton Macoute?
Well, not so much under Duvalier, although they would be some of the same personalities. But we're talking about people who were in the military government between 1991 and 94, before the army was disbanded.
Okay.
And along with them, there would be some people who were in paramilitary groups. The Tonton Macoute was the paramilitary group under François Duvalier, and then, as a previous caller mentioned, FRAP. That was kind of a next-generation Tonton Macoute paramilitary group that existed during the time of the de facto military rule in the early 90s.
Thank you.
All right.
Sure.
We have about 15 minutes left in this part of Focus 580, and our guest is Dr. Robert McGuire. He's Director of Programs in International Affairs at Trinity College in Washington, D.C., and has been following politics in the Caribbean for some time. He's best known for his work on Haiti. Questions, comments are certainly welcome. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. It's my understanding, and do correct me if I'm wrong, that basically the economy of Haiti has always been built on agriculture and agriculture for export, but that has collapsed, and now at this point Haiti really can't even feed its own people. What possibility is there for building an economy for the country? Perhaps a more modern kind of economy,
right,
that would at least provide a reasonable standard of living for people in the country.
Right. Well, Haiti's agricultural sector, its traditional base of the economy, is there's never been a great deal of modern investment in it, and it really does not produce very well. The major export crop now in Haiti are mangoes. And Haiti has quite a flourishing mango export industry, and it could be developed to contribute even more to the economy. And that's an interesting one, because mangoes are not grown on big plantations. They're individual small farmer producers who then market their mangoes through intermediaries. But Haiti has focused more on kind of export assembly, industrial-type development since the early 80s. There was a big push in the 80s, supported by the World Bank, among others, and USAID, among others, to establish assembly plants, taking advantage of two factors. Well, three, I guess you could say. One is the abundant cheap labor in Haiti, its geographical location close to the U.S. markets, and then under the Duvalier period, the kind of stability that is fostered under an authoritarian government. In the 90s, the levels of investment in these assembly plants diminished considerably, and the employment levels went down very badly, too. But there are some movements on this front. A couple of things. I mean, one is there has been some investment by Dominican business interests in Haiti, particularly along the border on the Haiti side in the northeast part of the country, to establish assembly plants there because the Dominicans have met their U.S. textile quotas, and Haiti has not met its U.S. textile quota. So Dominican businessmen are viewing the fact that if they invest in Haiti and textiles, they can help make the Haiti quota and help make money. So there's movement along that line, and that, in fact, investment has been supported by the Aristide government. On the U.S. side of things, there's a very interesting legislative initiative that's kind of winding its way through the Congress called the HERO Act, which is the Haitian Economic Recovery Opportunity Act. And it's pretty much based upon similar legislation that passed a couple of years ago to give preferential markets to African nations. And Haiti is being considered for that preferential market, again, to foster investment in the country and stimulate jobs. And frankly, I personally don't view export assembly investment as a true kind of a development program. But it sure would help Haitians and Haiti to have some kind of investment that can create jobs and perhaps stimulate other investment. But again, this political crisis and this loggerheads has kept a lot of this from moving forward at the pace that it could. And I think Haiti still has those advantages of location, of labor, of ingenuity, of excellent workers, of good people. And if somehow we could get beyond this political game of chicken that is being played, I think the country could rebound. I mean, one other last thing, David, I would mention is the fact that, you know, you have in the United States now an enormous population of Haitian Americans. Many of them have become very successful professionals. There are over 200,000 people in Florida, Haitians, registered by the 2000 U.S. Census and alone. So these people are very interested in Haiti. They want to invest. They want to go there and visit. They want to return home and see family. And this is a very interesting and potential investment for Haiti to take advantage of to stimulate its economy. I mean, you know, I would just make the parallel with the way Ireland has developed its own economy and tourism to attract, you know, people of Irish descent in this country to come and visit, to be involved in the country. So that's an emerging potential as the Haitian American population takes roots, becomes successful, and wishes to maintain a tie with the country.
Let's talk with someone here listening in Chicago, line number 4. Hello.
Yes, I'd like to know how Mr. Bush's new immigration policy would affect Haitians, because I know Haitians, the quota for Haitian refugees has always been kept down by saying that they were economic refugees, not true political refugees. So now that there will be this 3-year guest worker program, was that only aimed for Mexico and Latin and Central America, or would Haitians be able to take advantage of that?
Okay, well, you know, as all the analysts have been saying about this initiative that came out last week, the devil is in the details, and we don't know the details. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we don't know if this will move at all, or whether this is more of an election year kind of initiative to try to gain more of a Hispanic base for the Republican Party. My understanding is that no one was mentioned as being excluded from this potential change in the immigration laws. So I would imagine that Haitians would be eligible as much as anyone else, as long as, if I recall what the president said, there are willing employers looking for willing employees. The Bush administration approach toward Haitian migration thus far has been a very tough one. I think Mr. Bush is very, very concerned about the specter of anything that could affect Florida in the wrong way for him in an election year. And any kind of a major outpouring of Haitians into Florida could, in fact, you know, swing a few voters against Mr. Bush as having been responsible for this, and could affect the whole Florida politics. So the Bush administration has been very tough with Haiti. It has returned people, again, interdicting and returning. And if Haitians do, in fact, arrive on the beaches of South Florida, they are picked up and sent back to Haiti. So it's been a very tough policy. But ironically, I think it's this concern about migration that has, in some respects, thinkers in the administration saying, well, you know, we need to work and try to create stability in Haiti with Mr. Aristide there so that we avoid any potential of this kind of outpouring.
Are you sort of implying that if there is a great deal of interest from Haiti to be involved in this program, that might encourage the Bush administration to give more aid to Haiti to keep patients at home?
It could. It could. Because I think by and large, and I think this is quite unfortunate, that you know, Haitians are not viewed by most Americans as the ideal immigrants to the United States. I say this only because you go back to the 1980s when Haiti was...
this country's always been trying to get rid of black people, not encourage them to come. So I think everyone understands.
Yeah, well, and I think particularly in the case of Haitians, you know, you had this phenomenon in the 1980s when Haitians were identified as being part of the genesis of HIV/AIDS, which, you know, turned out to be mistaken. But it has left this kind of aura around Haitians, you know, poor black people, HIV/AIDS, they don't speak English, they speak Creole. And so, but then again, on the other side of the picture, when you look at what Haitians have done in the United States and their communities, it is incredibly impressive. And I think one of the things that is very important is to get that message out. I've been doing research lately on Haitian-American communities in the United States and all the impressive strides they have made in revitalizing communities like Orange, New Jersey, Delray Beach, Florida, and so on, getting involved in politics and being very democratic about it, very much like other immigrant groups have gotten politics as their way to pull up their bootstraps, and the incredible numbers of Haitian professionals that contribute to this country. It's an amazing story. And if we can get beyond the stereotype of what Haitians are not, and we can get to see what they really are, that they would be welcomed as immigrants to this country. But that's a big challenge.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. You touched on something there that I wanted to ask about, and here we have a couple of minutes left, and maybe it would be a good point to finish, and that is just what sort of influence do Haitian Americans have on the government of the United States and its policy toward Haiti, and is it possible that that influence might grow?
Yeah, there was a kind of a pincer influence of Haitian Americans working with the Congressional Black Caucus and peace and justice groups under the Clinton administration, and the Democrats were more willing to respond to this because it was more their constituency. Haitians are trying to take that beyond to have a bigger lobbying influence in the U.S. And I know that there are professional associations that do have contact with people in U.S. government, try to help them understand things. There are even associations now in Florida, I know, of Haitian Republicans. The mayor of one of Florida's, South Florida's, North Miami, in fact, is a Republican. He's a Haitian-American Republican. So, you know, there's movement along this line. It's not something that's going to happen overnight, but I think the Haitians in the United States understand the dynamic of it, and they're working toward it. So I think it's we're going to see more of this as time marches on. Hmm.
Well, I think probably at that point we will finish. I want to, first of all, say thanks to our guest, Dr. Robert McGuire. He's Director of Programs in International Affairs at Trinity College, and is also director of the Haiti program there at Trinity, and it's based in Washington, D.C. And I do want to mention for people who perhaps are interested in learning more about Haiti, getting some more background, the Haiti program does have a website, and the address is pretty easy. It's www.haiti-usa.org. So you might want to take a look at some of the information that's there. And to you, Professor McGuire, we want to say again, thank you very much for being with us today, giving us some of your time.
Well, thank you, David, and thank you for keeping Haiti on the agenda with your listeners.
Very good.